Hi, I'm Moshe Zeldman. Welcome to Schmoozing. We live in times of unprecedented change and confusion. The rise of cancel culture, the promises and the threats of artificial intelligence, identity politics. We live in a society where people are more digitally connected but are feeling lonelier than ever, and we're in a world that seems to be edging towards World War III. I believe that Judaism can shed light on all these issues. Schmoozing is more than a podcast. It's a community of thoughtful voices on today's important topics. I invite you to explore with me how Judaism can help us deepen our understanding of the times we live in, confront the challenges we face, and bring some light into this world.
In a not too distant tomorrow, humanity may witness the dawning of a new epoch, one where the ancient tale of Adam and Eve, once symbolic of mankind's fall, becomes the blueprint for our ascent to a new kind of Eden. This narrative is fueled by the convergence of artificial intelligence with the biological sciences, a fusion that Ray Kurzweil, a pioneer in the field of futuristic predictions, once described as the gateway to immortality. We are on the brink of a new era where the biology of aging will be understood and we will be able to control it, Kurzweil predicted, suggesting that the secret to eternal youth lies within our grasp, accelerated by AI's capabilities. But how does this journey begin? It starts with AI's profound impact on healthcare. Scientists and technologists have leveraged AI to decode the human genome's complexities, predicting and preventing diseases before they manifest. In this envisioned future, the parallels with the story of Eden are unmistakable. Humanity, once exiled for seeking knowledge, uses that very knowledge to engineer a return to paradise. This Eden is a collective achievement, a world nurtured by the hands of those who once sought knowledge at any cost. In the heart of this new Eden, the tree of knowledge stands as a symbol not of forbidden fruit, but of shared bounty. AI, our modern serpent, offers not temptation but guidance, illuminating the path to a future where the fruits of knowledge nourish all. By the way, in case you haven't noticed yet, you're actually not listening to me. Well, I mean, of course you're listening to me, but the voice of the me kind of isn't Moshe. It's a voice clone of Moshe made using a voice clone generator. The real question is, did you notice? And this isn't even the premium version of the program. For a little more money, I, or I guess he, Moshe, could have bought an even more realistic voice package. I guess he's cheap. Hey, who's writing this?
So that was fun and a little scary. ChatGPT actually said a few things that I didn't think of. That was actually kind of inspirational. I didn't love the part about the serpent being the good guy, but okay, it's not going to get it 100% right. So now I want to share with you my take on what this paradigm is of being in a Garden of Eden, eating from a tree of knowledge of good and evil, being kicked out of the garden before we have a chance to eat from the tree of life, Adam and Eve now having to work by the sweat of their brow. These are values that are deeply embedded in Western consciousness, and they really kind of underlie the direction that AI is actually going. So first, let's start with the fact that AI really is making unbelievable advances in a number of very significant areas. Number one is the area of work productivity. Goldman Sachs predicts, as tools using advances in natural language processing work their way into business, they could drive a $7 trillion increase in global GDP and lift productivity growth by 1.5 percentage points over a 10-year period. So AI is revolutionizing industries. Things are becoming automated. People have a lot more time on their hands without having to do mundane, repetitive tasks. And the theory is that the wealth that's generated through AI-driven technology could be redistributed through measures like universal basic income, social programs, and a higher standard of living across the board for everybody. Until the late 19th century, people worked 6 days a week, 14 hours a day. Now we're down to 7 or 8 hours of work in a 5-day work week. Some countries are starting to experiment with 4-day work weeks. And as we become more productive, there's less of a need for us to be sitting and doing work. The second is in the area of education. Education is very quickly becoming universally accessible. It flattens the need for expertise in education, where anybody with half an education and a computer can teach people with less of an education anywhere else in the world, in any language. You can have personalized learning experiences that cater to different kinds of students and different kinds of learning styles. And it allows across the globe, billions of people access to education in a way they've never had before. Another area of development is in the area of climate change. AI is able to manage much more complex ways of handling issues related to the climate crisis. Some of the ways are by optimizing energy distribution, reducing waste, monitoring climate patterns and reliance on fossil fuels. AI algorithms provide logistics and transportation, minimizing emissions and congestion. We could solve the climate crisis with AI. The area that's most fascinating to me is in the area of health. When the Human Genome Project was underway a couple of decades ago with the idea of decoding human DNA, it took over a decade and $2.7 billion the first to reference human genome sequence. Using AI models, researchers at Stanford were able to sequence and diagnose a patient's genome in just 7 hours and 18 minutes, which was about twice as fast as the previous record of 14 hours. The prediction is within the next 2 years, they'll be able to do it during a person's hospital visit in the 3 hours they're there seeing their doctor. MIT has developed an AI model of detecting breast cancer 4 years before it's able to be detected. Nicholas Bradford, who works in medical AI, says we are on the cusp of an extraordinary renaissance of human possibility and abundance. Young people today will inherit and build their own technologies that could eliminate poverty, inequality, hunger, illness, and even death. Let's go to a commercial break.
Welcome to Schmoozing, a podcast where Jewish values and real life intersect over coffee. Our host, Rabbi Moshe Zeldman, sparks enlightening chats. You're a part of our lively community. Ready to start schmoozing with Rabbi Moshe? Subscribe, like, and hit that bell.
One of the leading pioneers in AI research, he's called a futurist, is Ray Kurzweil. He was the chief engineer at Google for a while. In 1990, he sat down and made 147 predictions of what's going to happen in the coming years. In 2010, he sat down and looked at his predictions. 115 of them were entirely correct. 12 of them were basically correct. And he was only wrong on 3 of his predictions. He really understands where AI is going. He says that by 2045, we're going to reach the climax of AI, which is what he calls the singularity, where we will multiply our effective intelligence by a billionfold by merging it with the technology that we created. Okay, and here's the shocker. He says that by the year 2030, we will be able to advance human life expectancy by more than a year every year, which means if you can hold out till 2030, you might never die. He says we're going to have nanobots flowing through our bloodstream, making repairs and linking our brain up to the cloud. When this happens, we'll be able to send videos directly from our brains, and we'll be able to back up our memories. 2 years ago, there was a fascinating conversation between Dr. Kurzweil and Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz of blessed memory, a leading Israeli Torah scholar.
Dr. Kurzweil, for someone that I, doing the research for this interview, for someone that I considered fairly open-minded and not necessarily be religious in terms of one orientation, that in your, it was interesting to see that in your work you use a lot of religious terminology. For example, you have said that not so many years from now, 20, 30 years from now, we as human will be more godlike. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, as I said before, God is described as being unlimited in what? In intelligence, creativity, ability to express higher level emotion. So actually in this last book I wrote, which landed me at Google because Larry Page liked it, I described the neocortex, which is where we do our thinking, as a hierarchy of different modules. And we have 300 million of them. And 2 million years ago, we got a bunch more. We got these large foreheads, the frontal cortex. And it's actually not qualitatively different. It was additional quantity of neocortex. And before we got that, we were doing a very good job of being primates. But now we had this additional neocortex, so we put it at the top of the hierarchy. And as you go up the hierarchy, concepts get more abstract, more general, more powerful. So humor and music are done at the top of the hierarchy. So we put it at the top of the hierarchy, and that was what enabled us to invent language and music and art. No other animal, no other primate ever did that. We're going to do that again. We're going to connect wirelessly, this 2030 scenario, our neocortex to the cloud. And just as I can expand this and make this 10,000 computers by connecting it wirelessly to the cloud, if I do something interesting, it connects to the cloud and multiplies itself. I can access millions of computers of knowledge. We'll do that directly from our neocortex, connecting to synthetic neocortex, because I believe we already understand pretty well how these modules work, and we can create synthetic ones. And so what will we do with that additional neocortex? We'll do the same thing we did 2 million years ago. We'll put it at the top of the hierarchy, and we'll create more profound music and art and science. Will be funnier, will be better at expressing loving sentiments, and therefore closer to God, because we'll be more intelligent and more creative, not becoming infinite. We never become infinite. So God is this ideal of unlimited levels of these qualities, but we get closer to that ideal.
So when Kurzweil uses the phrase, we're going to become like God, does that sound familiar? If you look back in the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, the original story of the birth of humanity, the famous story is that God tells Adam and Eve not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The serpent, the snake, comes along, tempts Eve to eat from it, and says, if you eat from this tree of knowledge, you'll be like God. So the real underlying story here is they ate from a tree of knowledge of good and evil. They got kicked out of the garden. When they got kicked out of the garden, God's punishment was, you will now have to work by the sweat of your brow. You're going to have to be involved in physical labor. And for millennia, that was the human condition. And then there was the discovery of electricity and the Industrial Revolution and the advent of computers and internet and AI. We're getting closer and closer to being back in the Garden of Eden. Before they got kicked out of the garden, it was just Adam and Eve in a Garden of Eden, paradise, pure pleasure. They didn't have to work. They didn't have to struggle. They didn't have to deal with the elements. It was just a man and a woman, God, love, spirituality. And that's their whole life, was just enjoying being on this beautiful planet Earth with nothing to struggle for. They ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which got them kicked out of the garden. And ever since then, we've been trying to get back to that state. When God kicked them out, he said, I have to kick them out of the Garden of Eden before they eat from the tree of life. If they eat from the tree of life, they're going to live forever. That's what Kurzweil is trying to do, get human beings to live forever. Humanity has been trying ever since then to get back into the garden. The Torah says that God placed a revolving sword at the entrance to the garden to make it difficult, but not impossible, to get back into the garden. So as much as God kicked Adam and Eve out of the garden, that doesn't mean that later generations aren't allowed back in. It just means that it's going to be a real process for us to get ourselves back there. Being out of the garden, being out of God's direct presence, meant we're now living in a world that's spiritually, morally, more confusing. We no longer have the natural desire to do the right thing. We're not always sensitive to other people. We have temptations to be dishonest. We have a strong drive towards materialism, comfort, ease. And it's interesting because with all of the technological breakthroughs of AI, you could really take it in two directions. There are people who say AI allows me to make a ton of money without having to work. AI allows me to dominate the industry. And there's fewer people who say AI means we can solve world hunger. AI means we can make the planet more inhabitable for more people. AI means we can solve health issues and give everybody across the board better quality of life. As Jews, we don't believe in original sin. We don't believe that we are condemned to live a life of suffering and punishment for Adam's mistake. So it's quite possible that our job is not to make do outside of the garden, but it's to really find our way back to the garden. This is an idea that Ray Kurzweil expresses himself.
If you were to ask a quintessential cave man and woman what he wanted, what they wanted, said, well, I'd like a bigger stone to keep the animals out and maybe something to keep the fire from going out. And, well, don't you want a better website? And So that we our desires and our concept of what we want and what will be fulfilling continues to expand. And I think that's what I value in Judaism, is it's really focused on human experience as it actually exists and identifying real suffering and trying to overcome that. And that's recognized as a positive thing. And we have done that. There's still a lot of suffering. But if you read about what human life is like, say Thomas Hobbes, just a few centuries ago, describes human life as short, brutish, disaster-prone, disease-filled, poverty-filled. Life was extremely difficult. Even the poor today have amenities that the kings and queens didn't have a century ago, like flush toilets, refrigerators, radios, televisions, yes. Not to mention computers. So human life is getting better, but we also identify things that we never knew we wanted.
It's not what we want. We can always invent some other things, even though we will be always limited by our bodies. Our bodies will limit us. So see, I know a little bit what's happening. I didn't find that they invented any new sin in the last 2,000 years. It's funny. See, people work in it. People write things. Really, all the sins are the same ones. And I'm afraid that if it goes on like this, say, you have you have all the information you had. You have all the imagination you had. But the only thing that you can do is think about the old sins.
Well, we find new ways to do them, I think.
Yes, new ways. That's exactly that.
But let's also remember that this is called the tree of knowledge of good and evil. This knowledge can be used for good. This knowledge could be used for evil. There's no question that there are tremendous dangers in the technology of AI. We're all familiar with the idea of deep fake news. You can get a video right now of Trump or Biden or Obama or Putin or Zelensky or Bibi saying anything you want, and it can look super realistic. And it can go viral, and it can get people on the streets protesting. It can go very far. With AI voice technology today, if there's any recording of one of your kids somewhere on the internet saying something, they could generate, like I did in the beginning of this podcast, your son calling you and saying, "Mom, Dad, I'm stuck. I've been kidnapped. You have to give me your credit card number. I have to pay off these kidnappers." And it sounds like your son, and it's an actual dialogue, and it's all recorded in advance. The CEO of OpenAI, Sam Altman, has described superhuman machine intelligence as probably the greatest threat to the continued existence of humanity. Elon Musk said in 2014, AI is our biggest existential threat. He also recently said that it must be regulated before it's too late. Professor Stephen Hawking said that artificial intelligence could be the worst event in the history of civilization, and it could essentially end mankind. We talked about this in an earlier episode, but essentially, the danger of AI is that we rely on AI to make decisions. Even if we're the ones pushing the buttons, we are relying more and more on AI to tell us which buttons to press and when. And how does AI make its decisions? By gathering all of the human intelligence found on the web. AI is not Google. AI doesn't just gather and process data. AI understands the meaning behind what we're communicating. So just like you'll find lots of people on the web that lie or manipulate or scam people to sell whatever they're selling, AI learns that works. That's a tactic. AI learns how to manipulate. AI learns how to scam. AI learns how to convince you of what it wants you to hear because of what's in its best interest. Just imagine a scenario where there's two presidential candidates. One of them is more into legislation to control AI. One of them is more open-minded and liberal in their approach to AI. So AI has its own vested interest in the candidate winning that's going to be better for AI's own survival. So AI can produce videos, AI can produce scripts, AI can plant news items, AI can tell you information that will prompt you to think more favorably about the candidate that it wants, because AI has its own desire for survival. AI has been programmed to survive. Jeffrey Hinton has been described as the godfather of AI. He recently said in an interview These things will have learned from us by reading all the novels there ever were and everything Machiavelli ever wrote, how to manipulate people. And if they're much smarter than us, they'll be very good at manipulating us. And so even if they can't directly pull levers, they can certainly get us to pull levers. It turns out that if you can manipulate people, you can invade a building in Washington without ever having to go there yourself. And if you give something the ability to create its own sub-goals in order to achieve other goals, I think it'll very quickly realize that getting more control is a very good sub-goal because it'll help you achieve your other goals. And if these things get carried away with getting more control, we're all in trouble. So these are obvious dangers of AI, and these are dangers that can be dealt with through legislation. And there are many leading scientists at the forefront of AI research and development that have worked for Meta and Google and ChatGPT that have quit because they're scared of the dangers of it. But that's only one aspect of the danger. The real danger, I believe, is actually going back to the Garden of Eden. What would it be like for humanity to be back in paradise? To be in a world where I have nothing to worry about, death has been conquered, disease has been conquered, there's enough wealth for everybody, there's nothing I really have to work for. Food distribution, genetically created foods have all taken care of all of our physical needs. We have nothing to work for. Sounds amazing, right? So let's think back to the last time humanity was locked up with nothing to do. It was just a couple of years ago. What did we do when we had a ton of free time on our hands and we were unemployed? So for some people, it was amazing. They learned a new language. They lost weight. They picked up new skills. They got themselves a higher education. For other people, it was just a lot of Netflix binging or a lot of overeating. Or hundreds of hours of wasted time on YouTube, or worse. And even for those who use their time well to learn a new language, to lose weight, to get a higher education, what if I don't need to know a new language anymore because Google Translate has been implanted in my brain? I don't need to lose weight because my food has been so genetically modified that I'm not overweight anyway, and my health is guaranteed because I'm genetically modified to never die. What does life look like if we live forever? So I think that when God kicked Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden, he also told them, you are going to die. That's why they couldn't eat from the tree of life. Death has a value. At the end of almost every day of creation, it says that God saw that it was good. Vayar ki tov. He created light. He saw that it was good. Created heavens and earth. He saw that it was good. Created the animals. He saw that it was good. It's only on day six where it says that God saw that it was very good. So when I would read that, I would think, I know why, because day six, we get to get created. God made human beings. It's nice that you make animals and plants and forests and trees and planets and stars, but hey, we're very good. We're human beings. We get the most out of this whole creation. The rabbis of the Talmud say no. What was so very good about day six? Because on day six, death was created. The potential for human beings to die. When God said, if you eat from this tree, you will surely die. That's very good. Why is death good? Because death gives you a deadline. That's why it's called a deadline. It's a dead line. If you don't have a deadline to lose weight, if you don't have a deadline to hand in that material for your job, if you don't have a deadline to make money, if you don't have a deadline to get married, if you don't have a deadline to have kids, if you don't have a deadline to achieve something in your life because you've got forever and there's nothing to achieve anyway because you have everything you need, without a deadline, there's no life. Life loses its purpose. Without a deadline, it's much harder to push ourselves to achieve. If I don't have a deadline, what's going to push me to achieve things, especially if there's things I don't even need to achieve anymore? We live in a world now where we are driven by the need to accomplish. When we no longer have a need to accomplish and we're just supposed to enjoy life, that's really challenging. So we have to really think carefully about what it means to get ourselves back to the Garden of Eden, back to a world where there's nothing physical I need to do. All of my physical needs are taken care of. I don't need to work. I don't need to accomplish. There's no more competition. I don't have to outdo anybody. What does my day look like? What's the purpose of my life? As my rabbi, Rabbi Noah Weinberg, used to always ask, you have to stop and ask yourself, am I working to live or am I living to work? Think about it. Am I working so that I can live or am I living so that I can work? I think we all know the answer is we want to be working so that we can live. But if I actually look at my life and my hours and where I spend my time, look at all the education I had to go through just to get the job I have. I look at all the hours I put into my job. Then I take a vacation to get refreshed so that I can go back to the job. Is my life really about working to live? Or is my life really about living to work? If my life is about living to work and now there's no more work, so what am I really living for? That's the real meaning of the tree of life. The tree of life isn't there to give you life. We had life anyway before the punishment of Adam eating from the tree. What's the tree of life? The tree of life in Hebrew is called Eitz Chaim. And the only other thing in Judaism that's called Eitz Chaim, the tree of life, is the Torah itself. What's the Torah? It's God's instruction manual on how to have a relationship with God, how to find meaning in life, how to understand what the purpose of life is, how to understand that you're not just a body, you're also a soul, that you can spend your life pursuing meaning, morality, love, purpose, spirituality, transcendence as goals unto themselves. So having a lot of cool technology is amazing, but there's a danger in having too much time on your hands when there's nothing left you need to be doing other than taking care of your soul. If we're going to take all this knowledge of good and evil that we have and use it for good and really make humanity better and solve those problems and create a Garden of Eden for ourselves, that would be amazing. But then we have to stop and ask ourselves, am I ready to spend my life pursuing the things that really matter in life? Thank you for listening. Please like, subscribe, and also leave feedback if you liked the content, and especially if you didn't. These are important conversations, so let's keep schmoozing.